Welcome to St. Mark's Cathedral Conversations, a podcast featuring members of the St. Mark's Cathedral community in Seattle, Washington. These interviews feature lives of faith and adventure, service and connection. Here's our host, Michael Pereira.
We're sitting here in Leffler House, which has been the site of many gatherings and many receptions throughout the history of St. Mark's, I think. And one of the people who always makes those receptions and those gatherings happen has been Virginia Lenker. And I don't think it's possible to talk about hospitality and food and reception and greeting and warmth at St. Mark's without specifically mentioning all the work that Virginia has done for I don't know how long, and that's why we're here to find out. So Virginia, thank you so much for joining us today.
Okay, thanks.
Just to start, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you came from, if Seattle is home to you, and how you found church life and then St. Mark's.
Well, it is kind of an interesting story. I grew up in Ohio, near Cleveland, and I went to college in Massachusetts, and then in 1981 decided I wasn't going to stay there. I was going to move to Seattle, where my sister lived, but I didn't know anyone in Seattle. I had a college friend who lived here. I went to her house for dinner, and her mother said, "Oh, you're going to live in Seattle? You must go to St. Mark's and sing in the choir." And I said, all right. And I took the advice from someone else's mother that I might not have taken from my mother. But I went to St. Mark's and auditioned with Peter Halleck and sang in the choir with him, which was an experience, definitely. And then I got married at St. Mark's, had children, baptized here, and really didn't participate in anything here for a long time. And then Hisako was organizing receptions, and I helped her one time. And very soon after that, she turned to me and said, "I'm tired. I'm done. Will you take over?"
Just like that.
Just like that. And so that's why I took over, because Hisako asked me. Well, sort of told me. So I did. And I've done a lot of different kinds of hospitality here. I don't know if you know that. Do you know about the gratitude gatherings?
I've heard of them, but I've never been to one, so I'm not quite sure
right.
What it is.
We started that in 2008 or 2009, I guess, in the summer. And it was a way for people to get together informally at homes, or sometimes we had somebody who had a boat and we'd get together on the boat, or we'd get together just for tea or for whatever, just as a way for people to get to know each other in an informal way. And I organized those for several years, and then we sort of stopped that. And then when the Capitol campaign was starting, there were a lot of house parties. Did you go to any of those?
No.
Next Steps parties?
I think that was a little bit before my time.
Yeah. So that was another thing that was, well, sort of like hospitality, but it was at people's homes, learning about what the Capitol campaign was going to be. And then, let's see, Cathedral Day. I've done 4 Cathedral Days.
Wow.
Organizing that. And why? Because Heather Hodson turned to me and said, "I'm finished with this. Will you take it over?"
So your hospitality has been inheriting what people have finished, mm-hmm. and then just making that your own.
Mm-hmm. That's right. That's right.
Briefly first, describe Cathedral Day and then what it's like from your perspective.
Well, Cathedral Day, I think the first year I started was when the bishop's office decided to do confirmations that same time. So Cathedral Day is kind of, from my perspective, is a two-parter. The morning is the very serious, big service, and I have nothing to do with it except that I have to know what's happening. And I do publicity to tell people the date, and people from all over the diocese are invited to come. But I have no control over who's confirmed, how many, where they're from, any of that. But then once that service ends, I take over and sort of flip the whole thing from being very serious to being not very serious. And there's games, activities for kids. I really want it to be definitely involve children and families. Mm-hmm. And then the food trucks, that was Malcolm's idea. Involve people from outside the St. Mark's Parish, but inside too, and just have fun being at the cathedral, but not being serious.
Which is a good balance to everything that comes before it.
Yeah,
I think.
Which is why launch of the paper airplanes. That was my idea, to say how opposite of serious can we be?
Literally.
Instead of how, and not facing forward either. You're facing the cathedral, the organ, to see the kids throwing their airplanes off of the ledge of the organ loft.
And I know the kids love doing that. I mean, they love going up there to be next to this huge organ that we have. But then to be on top of everything, to look down at the nave, and then to throw things off of that, which they never would otherwise do.
Right. So that's my idea. And the food trucks, we've embraced that. And I have to say, the bishop likes all the activities, but mostly what he likes is the idea to just be with people and talk to people. And I would like more interaction. There are people who come from Blaine, for heaven's sakes, and Vancouver. And sometimes from Orcas Island, and then, of course, a lot from Seattle or Bellevue and all that. So to get to know each other, like a family reunion.
Is that what hospitality is at a 10,000-foot level? Here we do have a big community. It's still a challenge to get to know people. It's still a challenge to make connections. Is that how you see hospitality?
I guess I do. Making connections is so... Well, here's another thing. At these gratitude gatherings that we used to have, and one was at the home of Irene Tanabe, who was a priest on staff here, and she very graciously said, "You can come to my house and we'll make sushi. I'll show you how to make hand-rolled sushi at my house. And we'll also... She had a piano, so she said, "We'll have a hymn sing at my house." So that was wonderful. And I had never been to her house. I barely knew her. So I went, and a lot of other people were just like me. I barely know you, but hey, an opportunity to learn how to make sushi, okay? So we went, and I stood around, and I didn't know anyone, but that was nice. And you make chit-chat, you make small talk, you start making connections. Then during the hymn sing, we were sitting down laughing at things, and someone turned to me and said, made small talk. I realized that was David Wagner, who I had sat behind in the pew for maybe a year, but we had never talked. Never. It's just making that little connection, and then another connection, and then another one. So that's kind of what I think is spreading the connections, starting to see how we all have something in common. We all know each other a little bit, and then more and more.
It's kind of ironic, because you had said when you were here after doing your work with the choir, you didn't participate, you didn't really volunteer, you didn't get engaged.
No, not at all.
And now, so much of what you do here is facilitating that for other people.
And one of my goals, really, is to get more people involved in helping me. Mm-hmm. I can give them a little small job, like I gave you a little job, like I give to all kinds of people, and try to get them to know each other. Even if they don't know me, they can know each other, and that's
right.
Seeing how those connections go.
What's it like when we have these big community events? If we have a wedding reception, a funeral reception, a cathedral,
right,
something. How do you plan those? How do you prepare for those?
Well, we do have a funeral reception coming up this Saturday. And how I plan it is I have a long list now of people who will help me, who have, like, baked in the past, who have said to me, I love to bake. I never get a chance at home. I can't bake at home because we'll eat them all. I hear that over and over and over. I really want to bake. My children are grown. Most of the people I know are of that age. So I have a list, or in my head I have a list, and then I email them or call them, or sometimes I'll talk to them after church on Sunday and say, this is coming up, can you help me? Or they'll tell me what they like to do, you know. And I try not to over-ask my people. If I have two things coming up in a week, I try to think, I'll just ask my first people and then my second people. But people are so often so generous because it's very small what I ask. Like, bake a batch of brownies, a couple batches of brownies. They feel like, okay, I can do that. And I tell them when to bring it. But I think you were asking me something different.
When I mean, that does
how
answer.
How do I start planning?
Yeah.
Michael Sewer or the clergy tell me a funeral is coming up and the family wants a reception or something.
Right.
So they ask and they give me the date, they give me the time, and I want it. And I ask, how many people do you think are going to come? And then I make my plans from there in terms of, and this is true when the presiding bishop came.
Right.
It's every single thing I plan, I think about what time of day is it, what day of the week, and how many people do you think are going to come? And then, is there anything special? Like, remember when the meeting for Edwin Pratt Memorial? I knew there were going to be a lot of people from the African American community who expected sandwiches, expected a spread. They didn't just expect a little something. They expected a spread. That's what they usually do. And I thought, okay, I'm going to get ready. I want to meet those expectations. Not that I have to, but my feeling is also, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do a nice job.
Absolutely.
You know. And then I ask I usually prep in Bloedel kitchen or else in the sacristy upstairs. I tell you that having something in the nave is nice for the people who are there, but it's a lot of work for me. I really hate it.
You much prefer Bloedel. Well, because you have the kitchen facilities right there.
Have you ever been in the sacristy next to Thompson Chapel? It's not a kitchen. It's just a counter and a refrigerator. And that counter is so small. So
there's a lot of stuff already on it, too.
Right.
For the Thompson
And then
services.
We don't want to get in the way. Yeah. It's like a dance, and I can do it, but really, I'd rather do it in Bloedel. And then there's that cleanup afterwards. So it can be a long process.
You mentioned the presiding bishop's visit, and I think we had, it was standing room only. Lots of people who wanted to come and hear the man who preached at the royal wedding.
Yes, he was a little bit of a rock star, wasn't he?
Yeah, that was. We were very lucky, I think, to get him right around that period of time. What's been the biggest event that you've provided hospitality for?
Well, that was big, and I didn't didn't really know how many it would be. And that one we did outside, too.
Yes, we did.
So that was a whole different thing. I guess Cathedral Day this year, there were 600 or so in the service. And but having the food trucks, as far as hospitality, made it much easier on me because people could just go, and I wasn't in charge of setup for the food truck, but I was in charge of setup for the whole,
of course, yeah,
whole afternoon. Yeah, that was I'm glad that only happens once a year.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I mean, it's a wonderful occasion, but it's a lot of work.
There are a lot of people that I get to help. In fact, I would be happy to have more people to help. Both before Cathedral Day is a lot more pre-planning and considering beforehand. What am I going to do? How am I going to make it work? The presiding bishop, there was a lot of thinking ahead of time, what am I going to serve?
Gosh.
And then getting people to actually help get everything ready, and then we put it out on the front lawn under tents there. For this funeral that's coming up, it's for the priest who served at St. Peter's. So there are going to be a lot of people coming from that. I don't know how many. But so it's the amount of people, in some ways it matters, in some ways it doesn't matter. It's still before, during, and after.
What does good hospitality look like to you?
That people feel happy being together. Especially at the funerals. That's a funny thing to say, happy. But that they are glad to be able to be with each other. And I see that so many times, that if I see the family before the funeral setting up at the reception, and they're nervous and anxious, of course. I don't go to the funeral itself because I'm still setting up. And then afterwards at the reception, I see people start to relax, and then they start to, first they won't say anything, but then they start talking to each other, and then they start laughing. And I think that's the greatest thing, just to be able to be joyful together, even during the sad times.
I remember being at a funeral here at St. Mark's about a month or so ago, and to that point exactly, it's exactly how you described it. When the service ended, obviously it was a very emotionally heavy time. And that transition to the reception was a little slow.
Yes.
But given about 10 or 15 minutes, people are catching up, they're meeting people for the first time, there's laughter, kids are playing. As you said, it sounds weird, but in a way it's a really good catharsis, I guess.
It is. It's true that they have time to, the friends have time to be with, because the friends are often nervous too about, what do I say to these people?
Of
what
course.
Do I do? And then they just all slowly start to relax and realize that they're still friends, they're still family together, they have. Even when they share something about the person who's deceased, and they cry, but they laugh too, and realize things go on. So, but I have made some wonderful connections myself with my fellow workers, which is valuable to me.
Right.
I think, you know.
When you get the notice of a funeral or an event, you reach out to Michael Sear. To say what's
the... No, the other way around.
Oh, he
reaches out to me.
But then you say, what's the expected number?
If he hasn't told me.
Okay.
Yeah.
But then, I mean, either as a specific example or just a general idea, what happens if the number is way beyond what you had planned for?
Well, good question. And I try to learn from every experience I have. And we had one really bad disaster from my point. But I try not to let anyone know that it's like theater, you know. You're backstage, you're doing your thing, and you don't want anyone to know. But there was one where it was twice what we expected, and so I was in the back. I looked at the people coming in to blow down. So I went in the back and I cut every cookie in half, cut every brownie in half, took the little scraps that I had sort of said, oh, this isn't good enough to put out, put those out. I'll tell you, we saved some scraps for, well, I'm going to eat that in the kitchen, you know, like in the kitchen.
Of course.
The kitchen people, oh, we can't do that. I suppose if it was really bad, not bad from a theological sense, I like it. I mean, it's good to have people, but bad from my perspective, I could send one of my helpers to the store to get more. But I'll tell you, I have my tricks. I often don't put out plates. And once I put out little tiny plates, I just put out napkins. One reception, I put out plates, and then I could see how many, and I took the plates back. Because you can't eat as much in just a little napkin. But if you have a plate, you can pile it on.
Which people do.
The other thing I do is I have somebody, if it looks really big, standing near the table, the food table, especially if they're children, saying, you know, two cookies. As Ms. Gilmore said, I once had to talk to Rebecca about this, and she said, yes. I don't want them to be gluttons, which they would be. They would take 10 cookies.
Kids
say,
being kids.
You know, two cookies, wait. Or you know, there are more people coming. Just hold back a little.
I'm sure you have to do that for the adults, too.
Mm-hmm.
Hence the plates, which is ingenious.
Yeah.
That's really well done.
So that's what I do. And the other way, if there are not very many people, I try to make it look like, of course, you can have as much as you want, you know. Because there are a lot of little tricks that way. But mostly I want people to feel invited to eat, participate, eat what they want, talk, enjoy. Sometimes I'll tell them that those cookies are really good. Be sure you have one of those.
So we talked about that as the goal of hospitality, what good hospitality looks like. How does that make you feel when you see people in that environment, whether it's for a sad occasion or a wedding, which is, you know, we also provide hospitality.
Right.
For.
I never do weddings.
Really?
I've never been. If somebody asked me, I would, but I've never been asked to do weddings. I don't think there are very many wedding receptions here. Most people want to go outside. But if I'm asked to, and if they're having a good time, I'm glad. The only time I'm sad is if they seem to be taking a lot. And I know that the choir is about to come, isn't even here yet. Or the family isn't even here yet. And let's slow down a little.
It's a double-edged sword in a way.
But it is interesting. But it's great because sometimes it's so sweet. Like when the presiding bishop was here and we had everything outside and somebody came up and said, can I have one? Can I have one? You know, because they weren't from here at all. And I got to say, yes, they're for you. I made it for you. That's it. And then someone, a little child, came up to the baker. The best thing is if the person who baked cookies or brownies or whatever it is there.
Right.
and somebody comes up and says, oh, this is the greatest thing I've ever had. I love it. And then they can get the good feelings, appreciation.
Yeah.
And I always want to pass that on.
Of course.
Somebody made something, and I said to the baker, people were swooning over here. over your maple bars.
They that is high praise.
Yeah. Because that's the other thing, is I want to keep the connection going with my people.
Mm.
That I want them to know how grateful I am to them. Hopefully, that they'll want to do it again.
Yeah.
But mostly the friendship, the connections that I make, that's important to me.
Which is really hospitality. On one level, it's certainly mm-hmm. the food that brings us together in happy occasions and sad occasions, but it is those friendships, those relationships,
mm.
whether it's meeting for the first time or people you know will step up and you're not taking them for granted and they're not just a means to an end, but this is a real partnership that you have, that if we have a funeral coming up, if we have a special event coming up, you can get on the horn with those people and they will be there.
Mm-hmm. I do have one other thing I want to say, which is... sometimes it's wonderful in several of these. I ask people to stretch a little. I ask them to do something that they didn't think they could do. Like, for example, when Malcolm left, we put on a special reception for him. And I don't usually bring out the punch bowl.
Ooh.
It's huge.
Yeah.
It's a big silver punch bowl, and it's probably... 2 or 3 feet across. It's huge. And I talked to someone who I barely know, Shay, do you know her?
Yeah.
And said, would you do this for me, for Malcolm, for his last day? Would you serve the punch? Because I can't do it. I'm doing too many other things.
Gosh.
And she looked at me, and I could see she was going to say, no, I can't do that. And then I said, please, it's just one, just a short thing. And afterwards she said, thank you. That was so nice. And I got to do that. Well, she wouldn't have volunteered if I had really, many people are like that. They wouldn't do it unless I really kind of asked extra. And then they're so glad.
I mean, is that something you see in people that you know, this is a good person for this particular task, and even if they're not going to step up, I know I can have that conversation with them?
I don't know. And, you know, it is amazing to me, because I feel inside myself, I feel like I'm shy. I can't ask anybody to do anything. But then I just, something comes over me, and I say, I'm going to do it. I'm just going to reach out, and if they say no, well, I did. Maybe they'll feel glad that they were asked. Maybe they'll be mad at me, I don't know, but... Well, yeah, I asked you to do something we had never talked before.
No, it was literally one of the first times we talked.
Exactly, well, that happens, and I keep thinking, well, maybe somebody will be glad that I asked them.
I know from my perspective, this was at the funeral a month-ish ago.
Yes.
You had asked me to just be by the drinks. And like we have mentioned before, that transition from the emotional weight of the funeral concluding to people making that switch into saying, now we're going to socialize, we're going to not relax, but we are going to dial it down.
Yes.
A little bit. And to be there to, whether it was to pour a drink or literally just to pop open a can of Coke.
Yeah.
It was a tiny part. I mean, nobody will remember that I was there. But to still have a role to play in facilitating this moment of memory and remembrance, but also bonding and connection.
Exactly, because you had a chance to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
Even if just to say, glad you're here, or hello, or...
Yeah.
Well, anything, yeah. And I guess the other thing is people know I really need them. I can't do everything. I really needed you to stand there. I couldn't. I just couldn't do it. So I guess that's hospitality. And I look at it as the difference from a service where we're all looking in one direction, we're all quiet. We have a leader, and we are just supposed to do what we're told.
Yeah.
And this time we can take a little more agency of, when the cathedral shop ended, we had a reception right in this room. And I asked people to pour the tea and coffee from the silver tea and coffee urn, which we never, ever do. Because it's a lot of work to do that. And I just said, whatever you think, you do it. I had these people lined up, and I said, you're in charge. Pour the tea and coffee, sit wherever you want to sit, do whatever you want. I do that a lot. I consciously say, what do you think? What's the right thing for you to do? Do it. Not you have to do it my way.
Right. Because that could easily turn somebody off.
And giving them an opportunity to, instead of just following along, they can have a little bit of agency, but yet feel like they're helping the people who are there, they're helping me. That's my goal.
And so the hospitality extends. It's not just in a particular place, time, and moment, but people take that mantle, and then they, whether it's pouring drinks, pouring tea, or pouring punch, it just continues and it grows from there.
Mm-hmm. And then the next week, the next month, they might remember, oh yeah, I know you. I can talk to you now. That's the thing about the cathedral. It's hard to get to know people. Because it's not like we're in a little church where we see each other every day at the grocery store or on the street or anything. We probably don't see each other if we don't make an effort.
Sure. But when we do make the effort, we can continue those, even if it's just from one Sunday to another. So we've talked a lot about the work you do here in creating hospitality. And to finish this time together, I'd like to refocus the conversation back to you. What do you remember about your first time at St. Mark's?
Well, I came here, before the rose window, before the glass reredos wall. But I remember singing in the cathedral choir, in the choir room, which was very small, but very crowded, but people laughed and joked and everything there, and then singing in the choir loft. It's just amazing up there. I guess that's what I remember, is how great the music was. Music was important to me, and music still is important to me.
I was going to ask, do you still sing?
Yeah. Well, no, I just sing in the nave. I just sing the hymns, but I love listening to the music, and it's really great. Watching the change over time. I was here when Cabby Tennis was here, and I asked him, we were about to be married, and I said, would he do the service? And he coyly said, well, no, I'm going on vacation.
Oh.
Well, he wasn't really going on vacation. He was going on vacation, but what he really was about to become Bishop of Delaware.
But he couldn't really say that.
But he couldn't say And then Carla Birkadahl, who has a different last name now, married us. And that was a little edgy, I guess, or new to have a woman, priest. And that was kind of different. But it all worked out, and here we are.
Here we are. And on that note, one final question, just to close this. What's been your fondest hospitality memory at St. Mark's? One specific moment of connection and outreach that you hold very dear?
I guess, well, there have been a lot, but I guess getting ready for a reception in Blodell Kitchen and having lots of people around and we're laughing and making decisions about what is going to be, and everyone's having ideas that just kind of build on hospitality ideas and build on each other, and getting to know people in a different way, getting to know people I didn't really know before. That's it, I guess.
I like that. Just, as you said, there's a lot that goes on behind the scenes, obviously. And for all the beauty that we see out front in the nave or in Blodell, what goes on in the kitchen when the door is closed, that's got to be really special.
Mm-hmm. And I use silver, a lot of silver platters and a lot of silver things for these receptions. They're all kept in a locked closet. So that's another fun thing, is getting out all these beautiful silver trays and everything. And I think that helps the feeling of the people who were at these receptions to say, wow, this is all really nice. And I think, well, it's the cathedral. It better look nice.
Oh, that's a perfect way to end it. Virginia Lenker, thank you so much for sharing this beautiful, amazing perspective of what it means to open our doors to our fellow Episcopalians, but then our fellow Seattleites and people from all around the world who know this cathedral in one way or another, and how we can make this place home for them. Thank you for sharing that.
Okay, thank you for asking.
Thanks for listening to our podcast. Our music was performed by Michael Kleinschmidt on the Flintrop organ at St. Mark's. Michael Pereira and Andrew Himes produced the podcast, and we hope you'll visit stmarks.org. So long.